Dave Svanopdorp here with Jonathan Harding and Matt Ford. There is a lot of teams underperforming in the Bundesliga so far this season, and we're going to gauge the panic meter, how seriously we should take these progressions. We're also going to get to some of the Champions League group stages, because that's the topic you guys wanted us to talk about this week. But before we get to that, let's start with the game in Leverkusen. So Matt Ford was in Leverkusen this week after seeing Leverkusen play last week, and he talked to Wolfsburg fans about the outlook at their club and their coach, Bruno Labbadia. Take a listen.
This week, we've got a couple of Wolfsburg fans here in Leverkusen. We're here with Martin and Michael. Just explain a little bit about your day. Are you from Wolfsburg, or do you live in Leverkusen or near Cologne? Or?
Well, originally we are indeed from a close town, from a small town close to Wolfsburg. Yeah. But nowadays we are not living there anymore. Like Michael is now living in Cologne, but we had a rather small or short travel today. And myself, I'm currently living in Berlin.
Okay. So you're both originally from Wolfsburg, and you've moved away from there, but obviously you're staying loyal and true to your team.
Even though it's painful,
says Michael. Yeah. Well, exactly. The past 2 years, you've been in the relegation playoff against Braunschweig and then against Kiel. Are you expecting better things this season?
Well, basically, we just hope that it was going to be a calm season, won't have any of the troubles of the last 2 years. That would already be good. And after the first victory, at least it seems like we could be getting into calmer waters. I mean, I think the team is at least good enough to land in the middle space in the league. And hopefully we'll get a much more quiet season this time. I'm not really expecting big things.
What do you think has been the problem at Wolfsburg in the past few years?
I think there's been a bit too much volatility in terms of which people were in the team. And there were people like Julian Draxler, who is a good player but very, very weak in character, and he just came there to make quick money and then want to leave the team very fast. And if you have people like this, it starts to kind of rupture the whole structure of the team. And I think that was the issue, because it was, I think, never the quality of the team.
You had about three or four different coaches as well in a very short space of time. I don't think that helped either, did it?
Yeah, I mean, it's all a combination, I think, because if the team is made up of people who don't really fit together, and then it's very hard for the coach, then expectations are high because there's lots of money in the game. I mean, given what they spend over the last couple of years, and in relation to the results, it's pretty ridiculous, to be quite honest.
What do you think about Bruno Labbadia? Obviously, he came into Wolfsburg last season. He had a good record of keeping Hamburg in the league for the time being, at least. And eventually, he kept Wolfsburg in the league as well. What do you think of him as a coach?
Well, it's hard to tell. Like, I'm not sure whether you can translate it word by word. But in the Bundesliga, Bruno Labbadia always was called a so-called fireman. Like, he was only hired if a club was in very need.
Yeah.
To have a save at the last moment.
To put out the fires at the last minute.
Exactly. So, actually, I think the two of us were actually expecting that he would leave the club after the season.
Yeah. Okay. So you're surprised that he stayed?
We were a little bit surprised that he stayed, yes.
Okay. It wasn't just the manager. Obviously, there were a few issues with the sporting director, Olaf Reber, as well. He's since been replaced by Jörg Schmatke. Do you think that's a positive move? Do you think that's a good signal for Wolfsburg going forward?
Well, I think Schmatke, like, at least from what I saw, what he did with other clubs, I think he has a good track record. Mm-hmm. So I'm quite optimistic about his job now. And Rebbe was indeed very, very young. Mm-hmm. Like, before that, I mean, he was already working in Wolfsburg before. But at least to me, he was not really visible. So I'm not sure about his role back then when he was assistant for Alofs.
Okay. Michael, before, you were talking about some of the expectations around Wolfsburg. It was only a couple of years ago that you were in the Champions League, you beat Manchester United, you beat Real Madrid at home, and then suddenly you were in two relegation battles. What are the expectations in Wolfsburg at the moment for the team?
Yeah, I think if it's anything in the upper half of the table, it would be great. I don't think anyone's really expecting international this year, but at least it should be a calm season, I hope. But it was really, I mean, when we also saw the relegation against Hamburg, right? And we just remember, because we also were in Madrid when they played the quarterfinals in Madrid. And there was only one goal missing in the last minute, right? If they had scored, they weren't close to scoring, but there was just one goal missing for the semi-finals. And then 13 months later, we were in the relegation in Hamburg. Or the last game in Hamburg. That was pretty pretty tough.
There's been a few changes in the team as well. Obviously, I think today in particular, Joshua Guilavogi is missing. He could be out for a few games. You've also lost players like Daniel Didavi. He's quite a big loss, I think, this season. Daniel Ginchek has arrived from Stuttgart. Who do you think are the most important players for Wolfsburg this season?
Yeah, I think Guilavogi would definitely be important, but I hope Camacho can keep his injuries away for some time, because I think he's also a very important player if he's fit, which he wasn't last year. And then we hope Weghorst can score. I mean, we had one Dutch striker, Bas Dost, who was at least very efficient, and since he left there was a big issue in the offensive, and hopefully that can be filled with Weghorst. I think that will be probably the most important positions.
Last week against Schalke, were you surprised? A 2-1 win at home to the team who came second in the league last year. Was that a surprise victory?
Yes, definitely. Actually, I cannot really remember when the last season was that we actually started with a win. So I think it's good for the team. Yeah. It gives them some calm, some comfort. And, yeah.
So your prediction for this season, where do you think Wolfsburg will finish?
I would think somewhere in the middle of the table.
Okay. As long as it's not a relegation battle again.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think because we're here in Leverkusen, it's a question I have to ask. I think if you ask a lot of German football fans, maybe Bayer Leverkusen and VfL Wolfsburg are not necessarily the most popular teams. Yeah. Both exceptions to the famous 50+1 rule. Yeah. How do you respond as Wolfsburg fans to maybe accusations that Wolfsburg and Leverkusen are works clubs, Vereine, and maybe not proper traditional clubs? Do you see it a bit differently?
I mean, I would say it's definitely not as big an issue, because you see there's lots of money in other clubs as well. And I mean, if you see how badly Hamburg spends it, they've got Kühne who's supporting the club with millions and millions, and they spend it very badly as well. I think the only issue is, I think Leverkusen's doing a really good job. They've been basically constantly in the upper third of the table and really doing well, making very good work with young players and everything. So for Leverkusen, I don't think there's much to complain about. I mean, they spent their money wisely. I think the only issue is how poorly Wolfsburg spent their money over the last couple of years. That's more the issue, but I think as long as they spend it more or less efficiently and are successful, I think it's a good force in football. And also in Leipzig, I mean, it's a big city. It's very, I think for the city, it's great to have a club there. And if they complain about Red Bull, I don't see any sense in it, because they had clubs before and they were in third, fourth league, and it's a big city. In the East, we don't have many football clubs, so I think it makes sense if people spend the money wisely. It's more about how you spend it, not how much it is.
What's the relationship between Volkswagen and the city of Wolfsburg? Do a lot of people in Wolfsburg actively work for Volkswagen?
No, you could say basically everyone. Yeah. So I don't think there's hardly any person who doesn't either work for Volkswagen directly or works for a company that does work with Volkswagen, or at least you work in services that support people who work at Volkswagen. So it's pretty much it's like Detroit, car city.
Yeah. So there's quite a natural link, isn't there, in Wolfsburg between Volkswagen and VfL Wolfsburg. And I think also, at least historically, between Bayer and the city or town of Leverkusen. I'm not really sure if we'd call Leverkusen a city. And I think maybe people who would argue against that would say that there is absolutely no connection between Red Bull and the city of Leipzig.
Yeah, but that's true.
From a sporting point of view, it's certainly added a different dimension. There you go, more beers. What beer is that?
Oh, I actually haven't tried that one. It's called
Detmold.
I'm not even sure where that part of Germany or where that town is located in Germany.
Well, there you go. You've got to try something new, haven't you?
Yes, exactly.
So, anyway, Martin, Michael, thank you for your time and enjoy the game, and good luck to Wolfsburg.
Thank you. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
So that was Matt Ford in Leverkusen, and now he is in the studio. So Matt, you got to see Bruno Labbadia's team up close and personal. Struggled a lot last season. What in particular that you saw in person that you were impressed by?
Been two huge changes, I think, for Wolfsburg. I mean, the first thing to say is that let's not get overly carried away. We know that it's only two games in. And just as we shouldn't be talking about a Schalke in crisis or a Leverkusen in crisis, we shouldn't also be talking about Wolfsburg as completely having turned the corner and challenging for the league or anything this year. But the two things I've written about really today with Wolfsburg is, first of all, the physical fitness. which seems to have improved drastically, and the general mentality and attitude within the squad, and I think both of them contributed substantially to being able to not just recover from a setback when Schalke equalised against them last week and to go on to win that game, but also to come back from a goal behind against Leverkusen on Saturday.
Yeah. Both of the games this season, John, they've had to deal with a deficit, and they've come back from both of them. That's not something that we necessarily saw last season from them.
No, there's probably something to be said about the fact that Bruno Labbadia has had the whole of the off-season to work with them, and he's had time to get used to the squad and to get the players that he really wanted. I think Wolfsburg, you know, needed stability. You can also talk about Jörg Schmatke. We will at some point. He's obviously played a role in bringing some stability to the club, and I just hope that this strong start is something that Wolfsburg can build on, but also that the club allows to develop. If they end up finishing 11th and it's not a spectacular season, quite frankly, it probably is a spectacular season for Wolfsburg because it hasn't been a deafening high or a terrible low. It's been somewhere in between, and this club is desperately in need for two or three seasons of consolidation along the way. And if they can do that, and Labbadia is the right man to do it, so far so good in that respect, it would be really important for them and really important for I think maybe the Bundesliga taking them a bit more seriously, because it's hard to know what to think about Wolfsburg when you go there or when you see their fans or what kind of club you really think they are, other than the fact that their women's team is one of the best in Europe. There's not much to say about Wolfsburg. So maybe that season or this season that can change.
At least not in the past 2 years anyway, because I think they've gone through five permanent coaches in the past 2 years, combined with a number of sporting directors as well, one of which was relatively inexperienced, Olaf Leber. I think he was only 38, 39 at the time of taking that role. He's now gone on to the sporting director role at Huddersfield, which I didn't know until today, so good luck to him there. That's an interesting appointment. but they've brought in a much more savvy operator and much more experienced Bundesliga operator in Jörg Schmatke. And I think that's shown already in the moves they've made in the transfer market, especially going forward. Mm. Obviously, they've not acted on extending Origi's loan deal or anything like that. He's gone back. But in bringing in Ginczek from Stuttgart, that's a proven Bundesliga goal scorer.
So, yeah, very solid. Not just proven, but also solid too.
Been really impressed with the start that Ruud Weghorst has made up front as well. He scored against Leverkusen on Saturday, and that's before you get on to Yunus Mali, who seems to have lost a bit of form but has enough potential on his day. They've got a lot of options going forward, looking solid in midfield as well, even without Guivogi. Yesterday he's out for a few weeks, even months.
Mm-hmm.
You think that'd be a setback, but then the way Camacho, Max Arnold and Yannick Gerhardt played against Leverkusen, and they were solid as a midfield three. You've got to wonder, that's not going to be a huge setback for them. Generally really solid team effort from Wolfsburg. Genuinely impressive, because you do feel that, I know we saw Leverkusen start well against Gladbach last week before falling away, and they started well against Wolfsburg this week and even took the lead, and you thought, right, the potential they have there, they really have the capability or the potential to go on to score three or four goals. We've seen that last season. It's not happening for them this season, and Wolfsburg came back really, really well from that setback, and deservedly joint top of the league now.
Yeah, Jonathan, what do you make of Leverkusen? Because they were a team that before the season, if you even listen back to our preseason show, that you were high on. You were not alone as well. I mean, I picked them to be in the top four. I think a lot of people did pick them to make that jump into the top four. But after two games before their Europa League campaign starts, they have two losses. What should we make of them now? How high is the panic meter for them?
I think it's relatively high. I mean, you've only got two games, but it's a pretty appalling start. It's not just that they've lost, it's that they've also been very disappointing in how quickly they've fallen away, as Matt said, in those games. I think my hesitation, I think for a lot of people, it's probably the same coming into the season, was always the defence. Lukas Radetzky is injured. That's a problem. Rami Özcan is not a bad goalkeeper. Obviously, I think it was against Schalke. Or Gladbach, was it, on
Gladbach,
opening day?
Yeah. When he saved the penalty.
Yeah, and he had a... And that could have been a lot higher, that defeat to Gladbach, had he not
Pulled a couple of good saves. Yeah. Against Gladbach, but then the complete opposite happened against
he's a proven Bundesliga goalkeeper too.
But he was culpable for the goal.
He made a big mistake, and that's part of the problem. But you know, defensively, Dragovic is a player who's not played very much. You're still talking about Sven and Lars Bender, who are very solid players and great guys to have in the changing rooms, but you can't play an entire Bundesliga season relying on those two guys to be your centre-backs. Jonathan Tah is obviously the cornerstone of the defence, but he's still having to carry a lot of pressure on his shoulders. He hasn't really got anyone next to him.
He definitely suffers from not having a stable partner.
He's a lot better when the player next to him is better than him. And their wing-backs are still wingers. So they're very light.
Yeah. And Panos Retzos, by the way, sorry, you mentioned the wing back. I don't mean to interrupt you, but Panos Retzos is also injured as well.
Yeah, I mean, they have their fair share of injuries, but I think part of the problem is that Ehrlich has had an entire pre-season to figure out, and summer to figure out how to deal with that. And Leverkusen don't look any more comfortable in that situation. Obviously, Baumgartlinger's injury in pre-season didn't help. And obviously, everybody's talking about Bailey and Brandt and Alario and Folland. That's great. But if there's no balance to this team, they're going to be in real trouble. And, you know, that's not the kind of start that they wanted. The pressure on Ehrlich, you can talk about it being systematic in terms of football. Two bad games. Everybody says, you know, get out. Matt was talking about it and he's tweeted about it as well. It's true. You know, it's just part of the sickness of football not to have the foresight to be able to look beyond the present. But it is a fair argument to say that Helly should be doing better with that defence in terms of a system, not the individuals, than he is.
Then again, I think one thing they couldn't plan for was the injuries to Evanguez and to Baumgartlinger, and that's precisely the area in the centre midfield where they looked so incredibly lightweight in both games, especially when compared to the impressive
midfield.
He did come off the bench against Leverkusen, by which point the damage was already done and Wolfsburg had the tails up. And when compared to a Wolfsburg midfield which performed as well as it did, Leverkusen were always backing the loser when you're forcing Kai Havertz into a defensive midfield role effectively at times.
This is a player that really you have to build the team around, right? I mean, you're going to lose Bailey eventually, but Brandt and Havertz have got to be your absolute triangle, really. But if there's nothing in between, which is exactly the problem at the moment for Leverkusen, then it doesn't matter how good you are up front, and it doesn't matter whether you're centre-backs in the Germany team, because there's no balance, and I think that's Leverkusen's biggest problem.
One guy I want to talk about is Kai Havertz, because he has shown a lot of potential in recent years. He's came up in a really young age. He made his debut, I think, at 17, and is one of the youngest players, I think, to record 5 goals.
And to reach 50 appearances, I think. He's now on 54, 55 or something like that.
But he was in holding midfield, I believe.
That's to do
Wolfsburg,
with the injuries,
right?
Though, that Matt's saying. You have to force players back in those situations.
I'm just curious of the room. Is anybody else worried that he's going to get caught kind of in this Max Meyer quagmire?
I just think it's circumstances working against him at the moment. Okay. I'm sure he'll be aware of it. I'm sure Heiko Herrlich is aware of the situation. He's filling in then deeper role to do a job while his team needs it. If any finger pointing is going to be done, it's got to be a Ehrlich and the Leverkusen hierarchy for maybe not acting for a short term option transfer window, given the midfield injuries that they had.
It was interesting after the game. Colleague of ours, Thomas Klein, was at the game, and he spoke to Rami Özcan, who came out, and Özcan basically said he felt that his impression of the team was that they lacked intensity.
Jonathan Tah said something similar.
He said, "I'm missing that in the changing room. Why aren't we getting up and going for the game? Why aren't we approaching a game saying we're going to win every tackle?" I think it was in the first half, they had something like 46% of their challenges won. That's horrendous.
That's a complete contrast to Wolfsburg too.
Who were dominant in that situation. I mean, and for Leverkusen, those statistics and even that mindset that players are then voicing publicly to the press has to be very, very... those are concerning issues. I mean, even if he's your backup goalkeeper and he's willing to say, you know what, fine, my mistake, I know that. But if he's aware of it, and this is a player who's been around the team for a while, if he feels like the team hasn't got that right attitude, that's a real concern.
What chances do we give them against Bayern Munich? Because that's
zero.
The team they play against.
Zero
against Bayern Munich, unfortunately. And it doesn't get that much easier. Who else have they got coming up?
I think they've got quite a difficult run.
Quite difficult, I think.
I think that's part of the problem for Leverkusen, because with the injuries, if you can't find suitable solutions in the interim, they're going to struggle. I mean, after Bayern, they've got...
The opponents themselves are not necessarily difficult, but you also have to factor in the Europa League. So they play Ludo Goretzka in the Europa League after Bayern Munich, then they play Mainz, then they play Dusseldorf in midweek, and then they host Dortmund. So Dusseldorf, who over the weekend maybe proved to be a tougher opponent than many thought before the season, and Mainz also... I mean, maybe that's also a very winnable game for them, but at the same time, they do have to get ahead as possible.
That would be the problem for Leverkusen, though. If you come off that Ludogorets game, the expectation is you're going to beat Mainz and Dusseldorf going into the Dortmund game. And if you go into the Dortmund game having picked up 4 points, or maybe even worst scenario, 1 point out of Mainz and Dusseldorf, you're looking, going into, as Leverkusen, with 1 point going into Dortmund, having played the games they've played so far and having come off the Bayern game. I mean, that is a desperate situation.
Same as last season. As while they're shipping goals at the back the way they are, they're going to be overly reliant on that still incredibly potent front four. Leon Bailey showed again with his finish to put them ahead.
But if Hellish,
how good he is, but they're going to have to start outscoring opponents.
Exactly.
Until they get their proper squad back.
That I don't understand. If Hellish has that issue with players and he knows he's defensively weak, just change the situation, the tactical setup let's just win 5-4. You know, because you've got to play to your strengths in that situation. You can't play conservatively. If your defence isn't up to scratch and you're missing two or three players in injury, but you have three players up front who are massively brilliant, play for a 4-3.
Another team that is struggling is Schalke. They have lost both of their games to start the season. They have scored one goal in those two games and were recently shut out by Hertha Berlin, who got exposed by Andres Duda. Matt, you watched this game pretty closely, and you also wrote a piece about Schalke today. And you also said that we shouldn't worry about them either. What in particular should people not be worried about? Because I think a lot of Schalke fans that I've seen are not happy with the individual efforts that his individual performances of the players in the team.
Yeah, and I don't think Schalke fans would be wrong to be concerned about the way that they've started the season. There does seem to be a lack of intensity in Schalke's game, and perhaps most worryingly, a lack of ideas going forward about how exactly they want that fairly new front four, five to click together. But then again, that's one of the reasons why I think a little bit more patience is required, because of those faces brought in. Steven Skibirsky, who I've completely messed up the pronunciation of his name from Union Berlin, but I'm sure Ross will kill me if he hears this. It's not his chance yet, but be a player that I'd be interested to see how that would work. Obviously, Marc Uth has been brought in from Hoffenheim, should work out well in terms of being in sync with Sebastian Rudy in midfield. Yevhen Konoplyankov is out for a game now, having been sent off, but I thought wasn't actually that bad. I'm a relatively big fan of his anyway, and I thought, okay, he got that red card for tracking back, but at least he was tracking back, at least he was working hard. I just think some of these changes at Schalke have come a little bit too late in the transfer window, perhaps, for them to have had an immediate effect against Hertha. So give Tedesco more time for that. And I know it sounds easy to say, but if Caligiuri puts that penalty away and Schalke take the lead, then it's a completely different game. I know it's saying if my auntie was a man, she'd be my uncle. But that is football. The other reason why I think that there's no need for Schalke fans to be worried is that for the first time in years in Gelsenkirchen, we've said this before, they have an axis, they have a hierarchy at Schalke now in Heidel and Tedesco, who are finally working together, singing from the same hymn sheet and planning for the future and going about their business in a professional manner. Schalke's a very emotional club. I love spending time with Schalke fans. I like visiting Gelsenkirchen. But I think at this point, everyone needs to take a little step back and stop calling for Tedesco's head.
Yeah. Well, one thing, John, too, is we have to realize, too, is they actually, in terms of the people in their spine, they're not actually sending a lot of players to international teams in the international break. I mean, Rudy wasn't called up to the Germany team. Omar Mascarell is not in the conversation for the Spanish team. Neither is Naldo. Salif Sané is. So he, as someone who has struggled in his first two games, maybe he might need an international break off. But it's not like they're going to be apart for these 2 weeks. Do you think that gives them an advantage of any kind? Or?
I think the biggest advantage is that Sebastian Rudy isn't being called up for Germany, because I think Matt's right. There are a lot of new signings there that need time. And Schalke have made a lot of changes, and I think they've made good changes. But a lot of these players need to get used to the expectation of playing for a club like Schalke, the expectation of playing under Tedesco, what that requires mentally, tactically. But that's something that takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. Not the ideal start to the season, obviously, but having a break now, as much as I think most people on the outside would lament this break because it's literally right at the start of the season, some of the players might actually be grateful for it. And I can't think of a better example of that than Sebastian Rudy, because he's now going to have time to work with Tedesco away from everybody else. Not many people are going to be interested in what clubs are doing for the next week. He's going to have a chance to really understand on a much deeper level what Tedesco wants. He's going to be able to get to know his teammates. He's going to be able to get to know the surroundings a bit better and feel more comfortable in his day-to-day life. And if he gets all of those things in place, then there's a better chance that Schalke play better, because at the end of the day, Sebastian Rudy is one of the best players, if not the best player in that squad.
But there is still the fact that Schalke have only scored one goal in two games, and they weren't the most prolific scoring team last season either. Matt, is that a concern for you at all? Is that a problem that you could see persisting throughout at least the first half of the season?
Yeah, I think, was it last season? Was it 53 or 54 goals they scored, I think? Yeah,
they don't score many. There was 1-0.
There was no other team in the top six who scored fewer than Schalke. But they were so reliant on Guido Burgstaller, weren't they? And I think as much as we were all impressed by Burgstaller, he was a second division striker brought in from Jorgenberg, who I think exceeded expectations and did a lot better than anyone really expected.
Definitely. Yeah.
I also think that it's all about pointing to the lack of goals that Schalke scored last season, but that defensively Tedesco did a great job of sorting out the defence, helped particularly by Naldo's surprisingly obscenely brilliant
Indian
form.
Summer.
Indian summer. Yeah, how was he? 45.
Yeah.
And that improved hugely. They came 10th or 11th, was it, under Weinziel the year before. There was a lot to sort out before Tedesco arrived, and I think he made the right decision to go about that rebuilding process by starting from the back. So I think there was nothing wrong with that. You can't fix things overnight. I thought he did a good job sorting out the defence. He moved into a three at the back generally, didn't he? /5 when not in possession. So I think that was an interesting move, and that's the next step in Schalke's development now, to start seeing how they can improve things at the other end of the field. I think Marc Uth is in general a superior upgrade on Burgstaller in various ways, and he will link up well with Sebastian Rudy, who, or we can say, better than Goretzka, probably not, but certainly an adequate replacement. And they've got even better at the back as well with Salif Sané, who's outstanding last season. I just think positive moves have been done. Whether these transfers and these changes at Schalke turn out to have the quality that Schalke really expect to keep them top four, to keep them Champions League for the next 3-4 seasons, that's the question that they're going to have to answer for themselves. And I think we're all excited to see that. Jory's probably still out. But
they've given themselves the best chance.
Yeah,
they
really have, and they're working as a club a lot more professionally. Mm. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with having the ambition and the emotion that Schalke has as a football club. And obviously, they're all buzzing to be back in the Champions League, and we'll get onto that in a sec. But the bread and butter, and I'm sure Heidel will be aware of that, the bread and butter is staying in that top four, consolidating that top four. And despite a sloppy start to the season, there's no reason why they shouldn't do that.
And financially, makes such a difference if you're in the top four season after season after season.
Yeah. So it seems like we're in agreement that this team needs time to gel.
Absolutely. If we're having the same conversation
also
in December...
We shouldn't be expecting them to come second again.
But the reason why I say that is because they may not necessarily get the time to gel, because they have Gladbach coming up after the international
break. It's a
winnable
game. Gladbach are not good at the moment.
They have a Champions League fixture against Porto. We'll get to more about the Champions League group in a second. Then they play Bayern Munich, and then they have a road fixture to Freiburg, which It's Freiburg is not
a place to go. Yeah,
tough. But this is where Schalke want to be. They want to be back in the European Cup. They want to be competing at the top every 3 days, Wednesday to Saturday. And the question will be answered: have the changes that they've made, will they be enough? Are they of adequate quality to keep them there and continue this development? Because it's not going to happen overnight for Schalke. They came mid-table the year before last; it was disastrous.
So it seems like, in terms of a panic meter, we're pretty low when it comes to Schalke.
Yeah, honestly, if we're having the same conversation about Schalke in December, we can be worried.
Then I'll be worried, but not after two games.
So right now, since we brought up Leverkusen before, which one are you more worried about?
Leverkusen.
More about Leverkusen, but because I'm still not losing my head over either.
All right, let's get on to our Shout From Rosette section. Thank you all again for voting for this week's topic. And this week's topic, of course, is the Champions League. The draw was last Thursday. There's a bunch of other awards that nobody necessarily cares about. but since we just talked about Schalke, why don't we start with their group? Because they have, maybe they got I mean, I think we can all agree that they got the best draw
for them
of all of the German teams. And their teams are Lokomotiv Moscow, who won the Russian league. They have Porto, who has been one of the top teams in Portugal for the last however many years.
Galatasaray.
And they have Galatasaray, who, Jonathan, you made the good point that if went in that game in Gelsenkirchen might be a home game for Galatasaray.
I think it will be a completely different environment to if Schalke were playing an English team or if they were playing an Italian team. I think it will be a different atmosphere to what that normally is at a home game, which will be very interesting to see. How Schalke deal with that, we just had the conversation about Schalke being, you know, this is where they want to be. Matt's right to say that. This is probably the perfect group for what they could have had. They could have ended up with a much worse group. But if they want to show, and Tedesco wants to show, that he's capable of reaching this level and being at this level, then they have to come out of that group, I think. Galatasaray, very tough place to play at home or away. And I say to play at, because of what we were just talking about Schalke being at home and that being less of a home game for them against Galatasaray. Lokomotiv Moscow, you've got to go to Moscow, not an easy place. Yeah.
In terms of travel, I think...
Yeah,
Porto... Maybe in terms of opponent, I think it's...
In terms of travel, I'm not sure I'm too worried about that argument. You know, it's football in 2018, these guys fly in ninjets and stay in five-star hotels. I think that unless they're flying to Kathmandu, I'm not too worried about that having too much of an effect. I think this is a group that they can definitely get out of, but that's only if they play to the potential that they are capable of. And the big problem for me in terms of that becoming a possibility is this is the first time for Domenico Tedesco in the Champions League. This is all new. He has never had to deal with this before. He's never had to deal with midweek fixtures and then going to Freiburg on the weekend. He's never had to deal with handling a squad in that situation or the intensity of preparing for an opponent in that situation. That's going to be a huge amount of pressure on him.
Matt, you were very bullish about Leipzig last year making out of their group. And of course, they finished third. And they had, and one could argue that their group had a better overall quality than, I think Leipzig also played Porto as well, along with Besiktas and Monaco. Do you feel bullish about this Schalke team in terms of the group that they got drawn with?
I'm sort of posing the same question that I posed regarding Nagelsmann and Hoffenheim's Europa League group last year, and I thought overall I was disappointed in both, and I would say they probably failed in terms of not getting out of that. And I think the same question now hangs over to Tedesco, the same questions that John was just going through. Can he do it? And I'm excited to see it. We talked before when we were discussing Schalke about how they need to improve these automatisms and connections up front and scoring goals. Well, the Champions League is the place. If they're going to do it anywhere, they need to start doing it there. I think especially against Galatasaray and Lokomotiv Moscow, perhaps not Porto. I think that Porto probably be confident enough to come out and play football themselves. But I think particularly Galatasaray and Lokomotiv, teams which could end up sitting back, playing quite defensively against Schalke. So it's down to Tedesco to show that he can put together a team to break down and to show more creativity up front and break opponents down.
Be pretty ironic. They got to play against Benedict Hervidus and Jefferson Farfán.
Yeah, Hervidus as well with in Moscow. It'll be interesting experience for them, whether the atmosphere aspect with Turkish fans in Germany will be as big an issue in Gelsenkirchen as it maybe was, for example, when Beşiktaş fans went to Lyon, for example, last year. Beşiktaş fans were actually, they were technically banned, weren't they, from the game against Red Bull, but I think some of them made it into the ground anyway. I can't see that being as big a problem
I don't think it'd be an issue with
Schalke.
But there'd be more away fans than normal.
There'd be a normal amount, but I don't think there'll be home end tickets available to Galatasaray fans because of the pure demand and the size of Schalke. I think the games have all sold out anyway before they even knew who they were playing against.
Yeah, Veltins Arena is big, but it's still
big, but Schalke would probably certainly have enough to fill that a few times over for a European Cup match. A doable group, but given the way they've started, the pressure is on quite quick, and I'm just excited to see whether Domenico Tedesco can overcome the test, which I think Nagelsmann didn't the other year.
I'm going to ask this question about a few of the clubs that we talk about, and I think it's important because, I mean, you see teams like Hertha with a small squad and Cologne with a small squad really struggle with that extra competition. Are we convinced that Schalke has enough squad depth to deal with another competition?
No, in a word, no, not yet, and I'll be happily be convinced otherwise. But we've seen this. Schalke aren't the first Bundesliga team we've seen going into European competition for the first time in a while with, on paper, a squad which doesn't quite look up to scratch. Cologne paid the price, Gladbach have paid the price, Frankfurt will pay the price. We've seen this, Schalke themselves, we've seen this happen several times. Dortmund almost paid for it. It's a general Bundesliga problem. Teams don't seem to have the squad depth to handle playing in the Champions League every single week in, week out.
My problem is they don't even seem to have the strength to handle to play in the Bundesliga. And the biggest problem is everybody's talking about Bayern Munich, and we talk about them in a European context. But if Bayern Munich weren't good in Europe, no one would care about Germany. And that's partly because the second group of teams in Germany, the teams from second to sixth, who are supposed to be that leading group behind Bayern, and we're not talking about them chasing Bayern now, we're just talking about them being the second group behind Bayern, they are not distinguishing themselves from the rest of the league. Mm-hmm. How is it that the Leverkusen, Gladbach, Schalke, Dortmund, Leipzig group is nowhere to be seen in terms of setting the bar high, starting the season well, looking confident, looking quality, despite the fact that they've got good enough players? Yeah, there are questions about depth, absolutely, especially when some of them have got to play European campaigns. But that's my biggest concern, and Schalke is included in that concern, for all of Germany's teams in Europe. If they cannot set themselves apart from the teams like, no disrespect, but Augsburg, Freiburg, those teams in the lower half of the table that they're supposed to be beating, how on earth are we going to be expecting them to set themselves apart from Russia's best team, Portugal's best team? There's no way that they're going to be able to do that. And that's the challenge. Because last season, Germany's teams in Europe were dreadful, other than Bayern. And now, the challenge is, the groups across the board, in my opinion, have been very favourable to the German teams, for all German teams. Yeah, Dortmund have got a tough one, and I think we'll get to that, but they have an enormous opportunity here to change the perspective of German teams.
Let's get on to one of the other favorable groups, which is the group that Bayern Munich got drawn into. They got AEK Athens.
I wonder how many calls Uli Hoeneß made for that group.
They got AEK Athens. They got Ajax and
Benfica.
And they got Benfica. That's the third team that I always blank on. So two Portuguese teams that will place German teams. They should breeze through this group, correct?
They should breeze through this group. Ajax are not the team that they were. They've lost some of their key players. That'll probably be the toughest game. Benfica are one of those games where, you probably can steal a 1-0, 2-0 win or a 2-1 win. Ajax, they'll blow past them. Bayern should... There's a very strong argument that Niko Kovac... Also, interesting, first time in the Champions League for him.
Right, true.
As a head coach.
But yeah, Kovac couldn't have got an easier group, in my opinion. Absolutely perfect opportunity for him to have a relatively easygoing introduction to Champions League football and find his feet with that squad. So, yeah, good luck to him. I think he's got a good chance to come out of this looking quite good.
Yeah, I believe also
quite
the most.
Bad if
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
not just in terms of opponents, but also in terms of travel. I think in terms of the German teams and how far they have to travel. Maybe Dortmund is a little bit better, but they really do not have to travel that far.
Again, like John said before, I don't necessarily go along with the travel aspect in for the players and the staff themselves. They don't have to sort out their own visas. They don't have to sort out Ryanair flights.
That's not what I meant the actual. I meant the physical travel of playing in a different time zone.
I think it's all right.
I just don't think it's a problem for them anymore. They fly in.
They've spent most of their lives.
Lost to Rostov, to Bayern Munich. Lost to Rostov 3-0.
There are exceptions. Places like St. Petersburg or Rostov or Kathmandu or Baku or wherever. Yes, okay, I'll make an exception to that, but no. Bayern Munich traveling to Benfica is hardly going to be an issue.
Like I said with Schalke, I'm going to ask this about a few teams. Bayern Munich have 6 defenders, I believe, in terms of players that will contribute frequently. They're going to have players that are B-list players that they'll put in, like Lars Lucas Mai and some others. But are we worried about their squad depth at all?
I don't think that we need to be worried, because I don't think they're in the conversation to win it. I think they get to the quarterfinals. Kovac proves himself first time out in the Champions League, and everyone says he did a good enough job. He made the quarterfinals.
Depending on the draw, quarterfinals might be a bit short, but yeah.
But even if he gets there, even if, you know, they'll be like, oh, it's his first time, and he won the Bundesliga and the German Cup, so we can forgive him. Here's 100 million, now go buy the player that gets you the chance to get the semi-finals or the final, because I think there are 2 or 3 other teams in Europe that are much further along in terms of quality, in terms of managerial skill and experience.
Yeah, Davis, you talked about Bayern almost having two levels of squad they could field in various competitions. If I was Kovac, I'd be taking this Champions League, because it is so winnable, just extremely seriously.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd be playing Robin, playing Ribery in these games, and then perhaps for the Bundesliga games in between.
Introducing a slightly more second string.
Although Goretzka might be in that top tier now after his performance over the
weekend. But that's the best thing about Kovac and Bayern. He can do what he wants when he wants, really. So he's got enough players to choose from, and I think he's going to be.
He can't fail in that group, though.
And if he does, then I don't think Niko Kovac will be Bayern Munich coach much longer.
All right, well, let's get to the toughest group, I think, in terms of German teams, and maybe the toughest group in the Champions League. You got Borussia Dortmund facing Atletico Madrid and AS Monaco, and I'm blanking on the third team again.
Club Bruges.
and Club Bruges. So that, in terms of, I mean, I keep on bringing up traveling, the guys don't care, but that is literally right next door. So that is a nice one.
Dortmund.
I know the Dortmund fans are happy about Bruges. They can get a bus, can't they?
Yeah, that's true.
By the way, AS Monaco is the team, of course, they faced when the Dortmund bus attack happened. Mm. So
that will be an emotional game for a lot of those players that remember that evening. In some respects, I would be curious to see how Nuri Sahin feels, even though he's now at a different team, when Dortmund play that night, because I'm sure he will have his emotions going through a tumble dryer that evening, I'm sure. I think Dortmund's future or fate in this group is decided on how they do in the Atletico games. It's a tough group. Monaco are not an easy side. You would expect them to beat Bruges. Favre probably will be able to get those wins. But how he deals with Simeone's Atletico is going to be decisive, because Dortmund could well and probably will, if things go how I expect them to, finish second and could get a horrendous draw coming out of that group facing a top team.
How do you think Favre is going to approach the Champions League, Mac? Because against Hanover over the weekend, Dortmund actually had less possession. And they tried to get out the ball out to the wing quickly and try to break, which they didn't do as well as they did against Leipzig. Do you expect them to sit back a little bit more against some of these better teams, since they're playing some of the better opponents that the group stage has to offer?
I'd only, on paper at least, put Atletico Madrid as being a better team than Dortmund. I wouldn't necessarily say Monaco are streaks better than Borussia Dortmund. And Club Brugge certainly not.
I mean, Monaco obviously lost Thomas Lemar. I think that was a big player.
Yeah,
for
but
them.
To who?
Yeah, to Atletico Madrid. So,
I think from a tactical point of view, I think the Atletico Madrid game is probably the more intriguing. But I think in terms of progressing from the group, the big question to me is given how they failed to beat who was the Cypriots team.
Was it Cyprus?
It's Applewell.
Applewell. Yeah, yeah.
The Cypriot team that's in the Champions League every time.
Yeah, you can name another Cypriot team.
Sorry for the Cypriots. Two-one draws, was it?
Yeah.
That suggests to me the biggest question is can they beat Bruges twice? For me that's key. Yeah. I don't think they need to beat Atletico Madrid either home or away, just not lose. Same applies to Monaco, but 6 points has to come from those two games against Bruges, and that's what cost them last year.
I'm just keen to see how they fare against Atletico, because I think that will be a good barometer of how far they've come under Favre and how good this team really is, because there are a lot of good players in it. But I don't know how good it is as a collective yet.
All right, let's get on to the last one. It's Hoffenheim, who also got some tough opponents as well. They're facing Manchester City, Shakhtar Donetsk.
Same before. I think this is the toughest
and Olympique group. Lyon.
I think this is the toughest group for any of the German teams. Shakhtar Donetsk is obviously the games aren't played in Donetsk at the moment due to the conflict. Are they still being played in Kharkiv?
I thought they were playing in Lviv, where the Euro 2012 final was.
I'll double check that. They were at least at one point they were in Lviv, but last year they played Manchester City, didn't they, in Kharkiv? I believe.
They're not playing in their
home
stadium.
They're not playing in Donetsk either. But still, Ukraine's never an easy trip. Shakhtar have even beat Man City in the group stage last year. Although, as John, you rightly pointed out, that was a Man City B team. Olympique Lyonnais, that's not an easy trip at all. And City themselves, I think, given the struggles that Hoffenheim had in the Europa League, with Marc Uth, with Sebastian Rudi. Last season, I think they face a tough
but
battle in that group.
I'm excited about Nagelsmann, though. I think he's fully aware of his failings in the Europa League last year, and I am buzzing to see Nagelsmann against Guardiola, because this is like the nerdiest game of football you are ever going to see. These guys are going to do more homework than you have ever done in your life for that game alone.
Amazon will be all over it.
Yeah, I'm going to get a 24-hour documentary of Julian Nagelsmann's nose. I mean, unbelievable. That's going to be a really exciting game. I'm really keen, and I'm sure Guardiola is probably pretty excited to test himself against Nagelsmann as well, because he's proven himself to be quite astute tactically. I think Shakhtar are not the force that they used to be, so I think maybe the only thing Hoffenheim have to contend with there is the away.
They've lost Fred
trip
as well, haven't they?
Yeah, so he's now at United, absolutely. And then Lyon is not an easy side, absolutely. But
they've struggled in the Champions League.
But they're another one of those sides that can also be quite hot and cold. We'll have to check in with Mr. Farhat and Sabini to check in.
I've not got the actual fixture list up, but if they travel to Ukraine in November, December, then it will be absolutely freezing. So whether that's going to play a role, I don't know, but it's never an easy place to go. So
and the thing is, there is a chance there, because Nagelsmann has a point to prove. Maybe he says, I have a point to prove, we are going to come out second in this group, and I am going to surprise a few people. Now, finishing third would also not be disrespectful, because he's going to waltz into the Europa League if he does that. But there is a real... I feel like Nagelsmann's got a chip on his shoulder after that failed Europa League campaign. And yeah, he doesn't have those players, but Hoffenheim have never really been about players. They've always been about the team. And this team is not really that good anyway, I don't think, but it probably is good enough as a collective. I mean, they went 1-0 down to Freiburg on the weekend and then came back and got the job done in an ugly and not very... thrilling game. But there's enough players.
Can you
there.
Really see them beating City or Lyon, either home or away?
I can see them beating Lyon, not City.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that.
I can see them getting something. Think about it. If they beat Lyon and Shakhtar, that's 6. 2 draws is 8. You can lose both games against City and still stand a good chance.
All right, well, now that we've gone through all the groups, let's ask some... I want to ask some of the obvious questions. Are any of these teams going to win their group besides Bayern Munich?
Schalke
has the best
chance,
right?
I don't trust Schalke's
squad. No, I don't trust Schalke, but they have the best chance. So
I can see them going through.
So who else besides...
Oh, Schalke don't win that group.
Bayern Munich go through then?
I think all German sides...
I think Hoffenheim are out, Dortmund will go through, and I...
Ooh, Dortmund will go
Schalke,
through.
I'm torn. I think it's a doable group.
I'm going to put my head out and completely risk it and go for broke and put my faith in German football teams, which is just the most foolish things you can do at the moment in European competition, and say that all four teams will make it to the knockouts.
Great, wow. For the brand, John.
Yeah.
On brand.
Yeah.
If only this was a second Bundesliga argument and we had Johnny Walsh here.
I'm going to be a little bit more pessimistic. I'm going to say half go through. One of Schalke and Dortmund is not going to make it through. I don't know which one.
Okay.
But I think
so
one.
So much faith in Hoffenheim. I can't believe this. They're not getting through that group. Yeah, okay. Anyway, yeah. We'll see.
We'll see.
I'm happy to eat my words come Christmas.
So let's go with the last one. Which team is not going to make the Europa League? Finished last in the group. Is there going to be one that's going to finish last?
If there is one, it will be Hoffenheim.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't think this is what happened to Dortmund last season is going to happen
no.
again?
No,
although they didn't finish far in their group.
Like that, for me, that's the biggest question. Can they beat supposedly lesser minnows in European football?
Yeah. I mean, it would be a very shocking if they didn't finish above Club Brugge, but you don't know. It's just with some of these teams in the smaller pot, you just... We kind of don't necessarily take them seriously unless they're from a top five league, but they're still, they still are in the Champions League.
It's been interesting development tactically. We've seen, at the World Cup, how some of the supposed smaller teams sat back extremely rigidly, extremely defensively, relied on set pieces, relied on counter-attacks. I can see those tactics flowing on through into the Champions League and some of the supposedly smaller teams lining up a lot more rigidly at the back and just posing a bigger threat, saying, can you break us down?
And that's the question.
And that's the biggest problem for German clubs because they're especially for Bundesliga clubs, because the whole league, and it's probably to its detriment, the whole league is based around seeding possession, winning it quickly and counter-attacking.
It's all about transition.
Really
it's a league based on transition, and it's also a league that's based on fairly regimented systems, and in those games you do just need someone that's going to grab the game by the scruff of its neck and take control and score from 30 yards
when you suddenly come against Club Brugge, who are sat there with 11 men behind the ball,
who
in that Dortmund team is going to provide that individual spark and bit of genius to break them down? And that's the biggest question.
And the problem is for German football that Bayern Munich are the only club who have enough players capable of giving you that spark, whereas if Dortmund don't get it from Reus, or if Schalke don't get it from Oot or Harit, or if Hoffenheim don't get it from Nagelsmann, those are the problems.
Or Caligiuri for Schalke, by the way.
Yeah, and those are the problems. But, that's where the other players need to step up, because German clubs cannot miss this opportunity.
All right, so I think that we would be remiss if we completely ignored this topic, since you listeners chose the European competition topic. We got to talk about Salzburg and Leipzig facing off against each other Europa League.
Shouldn't happen. That's all I have to say.
Haven't we discussed it before? I think. Well, if it comes down to the, I think they play each other on the first and fifth match days, I believe. I may be wrong. I think fifth, definitely. And if it comes down to a situation, hypothetically, whereby a draw will send, or a certain result or a certain constellation will send them both through,
it's going to be Austria, Germany.
Then the whole thing is going to be showed up for the fastest.
I don't have the energy to have a conversation.
I know that the UEFA's lawyers have looked into it and somehow decided that the two teams are nothing to do with each other.
And that
Red Bull is now, theoretically speaking, only a main sponsor. In Salzburg, rather than an outright owner.
Well, they're only called Rasenmal, right?
In Leipzig.
What's Red Bull?
Yeah,
right?
But the two aren't connected anyway.
But then again,
we've heard from Ralf Rangnick today announcing two winter.
You announced that last night. That was
two winter signings that they're going to make. And
one from Red Bull,
surprise, one's from New York and one's from Salzburg.
Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing, but I thought it was hilarious.
I don't think it is particularly funny. I think the thing is absolutely farcical. But I saw a few reactions to this draw saying, oh, finally it's happened, brilliant. Now it's going to be showing up for the fast that it is. Finally UEFA are going to get shown what a mistake they've made.
Though.
I don't think UEFA think this is a mistake. I think UEFA are more than happy to have the marketing power of Red Bull behind their competition.
They're not going to change.
The thing, it is truly a farce.
All right, that was our shout from the Tribuna section. Remember, you can vote in our poll after every match day to choose what we talk about on the podcast. And that'll do it for this week's edition of the Tribuna Weekly. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Matt Ford is at Matt_4D, Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's, and I'm at Davis_VanOpdorp. We are still debating whether we're going to have an international break episode for the Tribuna Podcast, but we'll let you know on our social media channels. But until then, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.